Hello, producer Jonah Primo here, and welcome to Principle of Charity, where we inject curiosity and generosity back into our conversation on big social issues. We are very excited to announce our first live event. Emil and Lloyd will take the stage at the Sydney Writers' Festival, joined by philosopher A.C. Grayling and art historian and video content creator Mary McGillivray. And they'll go head-to-head on the topic of whether or not we still need books. That's on Friday, the 24th of May at 7:30 p.m. in Carriage Works, Sydney. And there's a link in the description of this show for tickets. You can also Google something along the lines of Principle of Charity, Sydney Writers' Festival, and it's the first page to come up. Just a reminder that this is part two of our conversation on this topic. Emil teased out the question in part one, and now Lloyd meets the guests on the couch. Enjoy.
We're sort of on the part of the show now where we are really focused on the principle of charity, and normally we have guests who have quite different divergent views, but in the case of both of you, in the case of this topic, that's not really the case. But the principle of charity, the reason we set the show up, Emil and I, is to focus and try and get a sense of the other before we reject any alternative. Not to say that we shouldn't reject it, but we should try and understand it. So some of the key principles that lie behind, in fact, the principle of charity is let's focus on the truth rather than winning. Let's try and sort of assume others are smart and intelligent. Don't focus on their weakest argument. Sometimes focus on their strongest argument. So, David, I'm going to start with you. And your book, Jews Don't Count, argues that Jews should count in the progressive left circle of concern. What are the most generous arguments for why Jews should not count?
Well, that's. I didn't quite know we were going to go there, because obviously I've spent a lot of time arguing against that with various people. And actually, I just want to say something, which is I agree that this is a good process. And I think the process is important, partly because it's been made more difficult by social media, where all arguing happens in a performative space. Yep. And people feel humiliated and emotionally undermined in much greater ways because they feel they're in front of an audience or whatever. I think that's important to get away from when you're trying to get towards the truth in any argument. I guess what I would say is I accept that Jews in between the periods in which they are being violently genocided and discriminated against in history, which happens cyclically, in between those periods, Jews do have a tendency to do well. They do have a tendency to be successful and comfortable. And as such, I understand how easy it is for people to think, well, Jews don't, it doesn't matter within the progressive conversation, because look, you're fine and you're fine. And I understand why people might think that, but it is a misunderstanding of history and also of the way that Jews will feel insecure because of the fact that, you know, they are always one generation away from something much more unsafe.
Simon, let me go to you. You were in conversation with Emil talking about, you know, the history of the Jews. And it seems to me it's foundational to the Jews that they come from their holy land, the land of Jerusalem, of Israel, of Palestine. What's the best argument you've heard to support the view that Jews of today did not originate from that place?
Well, that's been disproved by science. But I think I think what you're trying to say is a different thing, which is just because the Jews had a kingdom in Israel 2,000 years ago for 1,000 years and a small presence in the Holy Land ever since, and a deep emotional connection there for 2,000 towards it for 2,000 years, did that mean that they count as indigenous or have any right to create a nation in Israel? That would be the question that people would ask. Did they have a right to create a state in the Holy Land where they were not the majority, and where there were a huge population an overwhelming majority of Palestinian Arabs? That would be the question that If I was playing devil's advocate, I would ask, and it is a valid question. And one of the reasons I spent much of my life writing about the history of the Middle East is order to show that both those views are views we should definitely respect. Mm. We should respect the ancient history of the Palestinian Arabs. We should also respect the close connection of the Jewish people to the Holy Land. And I personally think both those ideas can be true at the same time.
Thank you. I want to move the focus a little to both of you and talk within the concept of the principle of charity. I mean, when you were speaking, you both spoke with a lot of emotion and passion, largely about anti-Semitism, but equally about, you know, social media, the left, the right. You both are now, it would seem, advocates of particular positions. Do you think your advocacy has limited your ability to listen to the other side?
I mean, I don't think so, but I'm very aware that I'm now in an embattled center. And since I'm being attacked from both sides, maybe that's probably the right place to be. I mean, I listen to both sides. I search out evidence that I respect, whether it's convenient to any particular viewpoint or not. And then, you know, when I'm writing Jerusalem, which is a sort of history of the Middle East through Jerusalem, and particularly in the new edition I'm just doing, it's filled with stuff which is against and inconvenient to my point of view. If you say I have a point of view.
Mm. David, how about you? Has advocacy limited your ability to listen?
Well, I hope not. I mean, one of the things that I think about myself in my latter years is, you know, I probably was pretty left wing when I was younger. And what I now think about myself is that I have no political position. And that isn't partly because of some alienation from the left as a result of anti-Semitism on the left. But I think it's more about a personal thing, which is that I prefer to imagine myself as having no ideological map that I can impose on the world. So no prearranged position. I do think that happens a lot and more as a result of the turbocharging of identity and political identity that happens in social media, that people tend to pre-think their position or anything, by which I mean someone will think, well, I'm left-wing, so I must think X about Y, rather than looking at that issue and thinking, what is the truth of it? What do I think about this, kind of independent of a sort of structural position that I always adopt on all positions? And I try and avoid that. And I hope in the avoidance of that, that I would therefore be receptive to whatever voice might come in my ear telling me X or Y about it, because I'm not interested in imposing a specific position on it, I don't think.
I've heard both of you described it, I think I have. Simon, you as, you know, historian, but then I've heard people say a Jewish historian. I've heard, David, you described it as a comedian, then as a Jewish comedian. It's almost as if over the last few years, this concept of the Jewish identity, and David, maybe we get to your statement, maybe it's imposed on you, but it is something that has been imposed on you, whether you like it or not. Does that feel restrictive to you now?
The use of these racial epithets is a very bad sign. And actually, I mean, I am Jewish, but I don't regard myself as a Jewish historian. And I actually think that any use of those kind of epithets is a bad sign, whichever direction it comes from.
Mm. David, how about you?
Well, I'm ambiguous about it, because a part of what I'm doing in Jews Don't Count is appealing to Jews and to the world outside, I guess, to try and see Jews as other minorities. And other minorities tend to very much, again, it's about empowerment, own their identities. So I don't think, you know, Eddie Murphy would have any problem in being seen as a black comedian. I was watching a brilliant Jewish comedian, actually, who talks about being Jewish, but Leo Reich is his name, and he's an LGBTQ comedian. And that would be totally, I think, what he would see himself as, right? And that's where he finds a lot of his material. And Jews, interestingly enough, don't tend to follow other minorities in terms of owning their identity in the same kind of militant way. And I am quite keen on that Jews should do that, because I think it's useful for Jews to look at the example of other minorities and the way that they are militantly, as it were, unashamed of being that. At the same time, purely like in terms of what I want to talk about and what I want to do, it is limiting, because I get offered now every fucking Jewish thing to do, some of which is very dull. And also, I just do want to talk about other stuff.
Me too.
Like, presently, I'm writing a book about maleness. I always want to do stuff that I am engaged with, right? I can't write or talk about anything that doesn't feel engaging to me. And Jew is definitely a very big part of who I am. But I'm presently writing a book about maleness. And it's interesting and good, and I hope it's a good book and we'll speak to people. But I am getting people saying, oh, God, David, what's happening now? You should be writing Jews Don't Count Too or Jews Still Don't Count. Mm. And I want to be able to move on from that, though. I want to be able to talk about other things. But it can feel hard in the present moment, politically, and also just in terms of how you then get identified in the way that Simon's talking about.
I'm going to just move to a very quick game.
A game?
Yeah, it's a game. It's called Net Positive, Net Negative. So I'm going to give you one line, and you either say it's net positive or net negative, and you just give me two or three reasons why you think it is, literally in 30 seconds, as if you were free associating. Are you ready, both of you? I'll do
that. Yeah.
Okay, let's start. Simon, we'll start with you. Trotsky, net positive, net negative.
Net negative.
And why?
He was a Bolshevik who believed in reforming society like Lenin and Stalin by killing large numbers of people according to their class.
Okay. David, religious day schools, Muslim, Jewish, Catholic, net positive, net negative.
Overall, I would say net negative.
Why?
Well, the reason I feel I have to say that in the end is I am an atheist. And as an atheist, I feel that the better way of educating people is secular, and that inculcating ancient ideas, which is essentially obviously what religion is, that don't take into account modern ideas of, you know, tolerance and all the rest of it, is a problematic thing. However, I've only just over the line there because I went to a Jewish primary school. I also do think that, and I understand how much identity is mixed up with religion and faith, and how some people want to preserve that identity and feel that they have to do so via faith school. So I really understand that. But I think in a utopian world, we wouldn't have them.
Okay. Simon, King Charles is Australia's head of state. Net positive, net negative.
No comment.
No comment. The monarchy in general.
Constitutional monarchies are an idiosyncrasy that shouldn't work, but for some reason do. In Northern Europe, if you look at where there were democracies in Northern Europe, you know, Scandinavia, Holland, etc., Britain, for some reason, the idiosyncratic traditions of a monarchy work in these real successful democracies. And why that is, we can debate on another occasion.
Okay, we'll take that as net positive. David, authenticity casting.
These are good questions. I would say in the end it's a negative. And it's pushed over the line as negative for me by the exclusion of Jews. So something I talk about quite a lot is I don't really care about acting very much, but I care about the exclusion of Jews from progressive strictures. And it is an absolute cast in stone progressive stricture now that you cast minorities in line with the actual nature of the actor or actress. So and that's not just racial, but you also, you know, if a deaf character will now be a deaf actor, et cetera, et cetera. And this is seen in almost all minorities except for Jews. And the exclusion of Jews from it is what makes me think that there's, again, a glitch with Jews, which is problematic. I also feel that overall, authenticity casting has become now a bit mad. You know, I can't remember what it was now, but I think there was an actress who was cast as Nina Simone, who was black, but was considered not black enough to play Nina Simone. Mm, mm. So you get this ridiculous kind of narcissism of small differences arguing about all that. Okay. But again, net positive, net negative, the basic idea of lived experience being something that should be respected and that some people may not be able to do that if they are not from that minority, I think that does exist. I agree.
So you're net positive.
No, I'm net negative. I'm negative.
Good Sam. Right. Simon, the Bible.
Net positive, because it's a it providing it's viewed in the right way. I don't view it as God's word. I just review it as a library of fascinating sacred and historical texts of differing reliability.
David, Roman Abramovich, so a Russian oligarch, former owner of your great football team, Chelsea.
Oh, I think he was a net positive for Chelsea, definitely. You know, he did wonderful things for Chelsea. And as a Chelsea fan, it's very hard for me to say net negative, especially as the club has gone down a bit since he went, didn't go away, since he was forced out of that situation. But I think overall, I don't think one could classify Roman as a net positive.
David, back to you as a comedian. Are there any taboo subjects in comedy? I mean, are people permitted to make Holocaust jokes, jokes about slavery, 9/11? And if so, how are they, you know, supposed to tell those jokes?
Well, my position on that has always been that it's not about the subject matter, it's about the specific joke. So obviously, to choose the Holocaust as an example, you can tell a horrible, inhumane joke about the Holocaust. You can also tell a joke about the Holocaust that is supportive of the victims or satirical of the Nazis. Jews themselves, while they were in the camps, did that. I tell a Holocaust joke in my show Trolls Not the Dolls, which I'm doing at the Royal. I'm recording all three of my one-man shows for Sky Arts at the end of the month, at the end of March at the Royal Court, and I tell this joke, which is not my joke. It's a joke that was told to me about a Jewish academic, and it involves a Holocaust survivor who dies after the war. And then goes to heaven. And when he gets to heaven, God asks him to tell a Holocaust joke. And so the survivor does. And God says, that's not funny. And the survivor says, well, I guess you had to be there. And I love that joke. I think it's a really beautiful, profound joke about the absence of God during the years 1939 to 45. But it is a Holocaust joke. And that's the point, is that you can't deconstruct that joke and say it is cruel or racist or whatever, but obviously there would be Holocaust jokes that you can. So when people say you can't tell a joke about X or Y, always say tell me the joke. Don't say you can't just tell a joke about that. However, more and more and more people are getting, again, social media is responsible for this, terrible old fucking social media is responsible for creating a position whereby people just hear a word in someone's routine and say, right, that's impossible, you're not allowed to laugh about that. There's a notion abroad now, which is that laughter is always mockery, which it is not. Laughter is a complex human response, and it can be embracing, it can be self-satirizing, it can be different in different contexts, different in terms of who's saying it, but there's a notion now that laughter is always, always mockery and is weaponized as such. So I would say there isn't anything you can't joke about. It depends on the joke, is the answer to that question.
On that note, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure having both of you on the show.
Thank you so much. You've given us a lot of time. I really appreciate it.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, please rate us and leave a review. That is simply the best way to support the show and help it grow. We'll see you soon for more Principle of Charity. But first, a word from our partners.
The Ethics Centre is an independent not-for-profit that for over 30 years has advocated for a more ethical society. Through all our work, we bring people together, create space for difficult conversations, and encourage all to live and act according to their values. Check out our website for free access to articles, podcasts, and videos that unpack the complexities of everyday life at www.ethics.org.au.